This is Scorebook Live Today, a podcast about high school sports across the state of Washington. I'm Andy Bueller, high school sports reporter, and your host. And joining me via Zoom are your pals, senior reporter Todd Millis, and analyst, former NBA player, college All-American, Dan Dickow. Thanks for joining me, guys. How you doing today?
I'm well. It's been a while since I've had a haircut or a shave, which you guys can see on this Zoom call. The listeners, thankfully, don't have to look at it, that's for sure.
Well, nobody can see Andy's bun under that baseball cap either. So we all are in need of a haircut, Dan.
Don't worry about it. But I'm in the same boat. I need an at home barber or something like that, or just shave it all off. So we're getting there.
Okay.
So Dan, you've been really busy. We've all been busy, hard at work, telling stories of high school athletes around the state. And, you know, particularly Dan, something I want you to talk about right off the top is, if you're subscribed to this podcast every weekday, including this morning, Thursday, as we're recording this, you're releasing interviews, with a wide array of guests. They've been awesome to listen to. If you haven't listened to them yet, you can go in on the podcast feed, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and they're all there free for download. But it's been a really fun thing to listen to, Dan. How has your experience been doing those interview series, and what can we expect going forward?
Yeah, you know, it's been a really fun change for me alongside you guys with what we do for Scorebook Live Washington. You know, throughout the high school season, we're constantly talking about high school athletes and teams and coaches, and rightfully so. But with, you know, everything that's going on in the world, there's no spring sports. You guys have kind of taken the lead in writing some unique features and different stories at this time and continuing the podcast. And we decided to take my time and kind of spin it in a different direction and use those the downtime for me to connect with a lot of different people that I know in the sports world, whether they're athletes, coaches, broadcasters, front office executives, and try to bring some advice, some pieces of wisdom and nuggets. And so we've been releasing one a day. We've had some really good ones up till now at all different levels. And we've got some tremendous ones that are coming up. I mean, you go down the list, the ones we've already released, Kelly Graves, the Oregon coach, Tom Fletcher, who's the vice president of business and marketing for the Suns now. We had Steve Shanwald, who was with the Bulls during their magical runs. Mm-hmm. We've got college coaches. Neil Everett from SportsCenter will be released soon. Drew Bledsoe, Rodney Stuckey, Jamal Crawford, Doug Christie. I mean, there's been a lot of really good guests, and I think there's going to be some insight that all these people have because of their experiences that I think will be productive for people to listen to. I know it's been eye-opening for me. I've got pages and pages of notes, questions that I wanted to ask these guests. And then once they start talking about different things, it leads me to another question. And then I've got all these notes about different things that when this is all said and done and we're back to our normal routine with what we do for Scorebook Live, I'm going to have some of these notes to kind of go back and kind of help me in my personal broadcasting career, or help me look at different things when I'm coaching, whether it's my son's team or different groups in a workout. It's been a lot of fun to put this together.
One of the interesting parts also has been the ways that different guests have gotten you to open up, and it's kind of unlocked some of your playing experiences, your basketball experiences. You know, today, as we release this Thursday, RJ Barsh, assistant coach at Boise State with deep Tacoma ties, was on the podcast. And I loved how you talked about, you gave a great Lorenzo Romar story from your college days. So there's little nuggets in there where, you know, regardless of, you know, who you are, a high school athlete, a parent of a high school athlete, or just a fan of sports, there's something for everybody in this interview series. So stay tuned to the podcast feed, subscribe if you haven't already. And there's a lot more to come, as you said, but we're going to jump into something today that this is about the closest thing to actual sports that the sports world has been able to collectively experience. And that's been the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, which debuted Sunday on ESPN. It's a 10-part docuseries. And anyone on social media who is tuned into the sports world has probably experienced the ways that it feels like the sports world in the big way has come together to really enjoy this this documentary. Now, it's also unlocked some fun memories for you, Dan, because you know you played in the NBA at the same time as Jordan, as Pippen. You overlapped with some of those guys. So I'd love to hear about your experience. Your rookie season, you were an Atlanta Hawk, and you guys went up against the Washington Wizard, Michael Jordan led Washington Wizards. Walk us through what that was like, what you remember from those times.
Well, this Last Dance documentary docuseries is brought back a crazy amount of memories from when I was, you know, the first time I can remember watching basketball games on TV would have been the 1986 playoffs that was just chronicled in detail with the Celtics getting smoked by Jordan, but the Celtics pulling out the wins because all the Hall of Famers they had, all the way through, you know, watching Jordan hit that last jump shot against the Jazz. I remember I was at graduation and they used to have these things called a Walkman, but they also had a Watchman. And if you had a long enough antenna, you had like a 1.5-inch screen that you could watch TV feed. You know, you had your four channels, basically, ABC, CBS, NBC, and probably PBS, who knows. Excuse me. So I remember it was my 1997 high school graduation, and my family, we had a Watchman. My dad had won it for some award for the company he was working with. So I'm at high school graduation, and it's coinciding with the NBA Finals. I didn't care. I was sitting right there during graduation watching the NBA Finals and watching Michael Jordan go up against the Jazz. So that's kind of the impact that he had on me as a basketball player growing up. Fast forward, obviously, he comes back to play again for the Wizards. And his last year is, like you mentioned, my rookie year with the Wizards. Now, I've always respected every opponent that I've played against, but I've never backed down from anybody. My first time that is on the schedule to play against the Wizards, my rookie year with the Hawks, I'm out with a knee injury. I had just had a meniscus tear, a surgery, so I missed 6 weeks. So I didn't get to play in the first game that was on the schedule, and I was as disappointed as you could imagine. I mean, one of the things I'd been looking forward to ever since I thought there might be a chance to play against Jordan. So I remember, you know, I'm ready to walk out of the locker room and go back and sit on the bench before the game. And I walk out of the locker room just by myself. And Michael Jordan's walking down the hallway to go out to pregame warmups. And I'd never met Jordan at the time. I'd never played against him at the time. But just watching how he walked down the hallway, not even onto the court yet, I was blown away. I was like, I'm in the presence of greatness. There was no other way to describe it. And I've always respected opponents, but I've never feared them. But I could not take my eyes off of watching another athlete walk down a hallway, finish tying his shoes, snap up his sweats on the side, and run out onto the court. So that was my first time being up close. A couple months later, finally had a chance to play in a game against him. So twice in my rookie year, I was in the game against Jordan. First time would have been a home game, and check into the game. A couple of possessions later, Jordan gets a rebound and he's pushing it up in transition. And it's my responsibility to stop the ball in transition. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, Michael Jordan is dribbling up the court at me. He pulls up, shoots a jump shot. I go up to contest. He missed it through no good deed on my own. It just, he happened to miss a jump shot. And then I remember, you know, a couple possessions later, a free throw, and I'm just standing there, and I'm just looking back and forth. Jordan, to who's shooting the free throw. Jordan, to who's at the free throw line. And it's the only time I've ever been on a basketball court and, like, trying to pinch myself. I mean, and I played against Kobe, and Kobe was amazing. I played against LeBron when I was an older player, and he was early in his career. I played against Shaq and had conversations with a lot of these guys. But there was something about Michael Jordan that was just unbelievable. I was blown away at the time, and I still am, at, you know, thinking about it now. I've got two things in my office here at the house, in my office, that are Michael Jordan related. One was the game ball from that first time I had a chance to play against Jordan in my rookie year. I have the ball that was used that game, autographed by Michael Jordan. And then I have a picture from the second game my rookie year in Washington, where every NBA team typically has a photographer that follows them throughout the whole entire season, goes to all the games. You kind of get to know them really well. Well, I knew this would be the last chance I ever had to play against Michael Jordan, because obviously he was retiring. So I remember going up to the photographer and saying, "Hey, if there's any chance in the game that you can get a picture of me with Jordan, please do." And so I don't remember matching up with him on any particular possession that game, but there was another break in the action and there was a free throw. And I remember directly looking at this photographer, catching his eye, and then walking over right next to Jordan, kind of circled around the 3-point line during a free throw. And I currently have that. My wife blew that up, that picture up, as a canvas. And I've always kind of looked at that for memories and inspiration. But the reason I remember I mentioned that picture is about 6 years after my wife blew up that picture as a canvas, kind of memento for me, I was running basketball camps down in the Vancouver area. And one of my friends who was helping me with running camp, his dad worked the Michael Jordan fantasy camp in Santa Barbara for a good 10, 12 years. So every year he would go down there. And part of the deal for coaches that worked the camp, I believe they got one or two pieces of memorabilia that Jordan would autograph. All of the autographs that Michael Jordan would do would be authenticated by Upper Deck. So you could pick whatever it is, but it's going to be authenticated. There's going to be documentation on it. So my friend's dad offers to take down this canvas picture and have Michael Jordan sign it. And I'm like, "You don't have to do that. It's not that big a deal." He goes, "No, just I'll take it down there." He had to wrap this up in cardboard and styrofoam, make sure it didn't get ruined on the plane. And it's his turn to take it down and have Jordan sign it. And most people are having a basketball or a shirt or something signed. He pulls out this canvas picture. It's, you know, 4 feet, 3 feet by 2 feet, a typical poster size, hands it to Michael Jordan. And he told me that Jordan had the most puzzled look on his face. Like, "What the heck is this? It's a picture of me and Dan Dickow. Why do you have this? What's going on here?" And so my friend's dad kind of shared the whole entire backstory. He said Michael had a huge smile on his face and he had another chuckle. And he said, "You know what? I appreciate you bringing this down here. Tell Dan I said hi and congrats on a nice career." I thought that was a pretty cool and unique story that came about after my playing career. And all the time I look at it in my office and it brings back good memories.
Dan, I know you watched the first weekend of the documentary. What was the most revealing aspect of the 2 hours so far for you?
I think the theme that continues to come through the documentary and just in the first two episodes, and I'm sure it's going to come through loud and clear in the last eight, is just how competitive he was. Nobody was going to tell him no. Nobody was going to outwork him. Nobody was going to do anything to take him out off of his path of wanting to win. I watched episode two again this morning before my kids woke up, and I was fixated on that second year of his career where he had a broken bone in his foot, his navicular bone. I broke the same bone in my foot, and I know how strenuous the rehab is on that. And the front office at the time wanted him to just call the season a wash and be done. And he was, "No, I'm not doing that." He did everything he could to get back. And he was so unbelievably appalled by the fact that a front office didn't want to win and they would rather get a better opportunity to get more ping pong balls in the lottery at the time. I think that's the biggest takeaway that kids could get at this day and age. One of the biggest takeaways that, quite frankly, hate to say it, but a lot of NBA players could take away, this thought and this idea of load management, I just don't buy. You look at some of the greatest players in the history of the NBA, Michael Jordan being the greatest ever. He did everything he could to get back and play at the highest level, and he fought minutes restrictions, and he never missed a game unless it was absolutely warranted. John Stockton was the same way. Karl Malone was the same way. Now, that's something that everybody says they're grinding, they're doing this and that. Well, no, not compared to what Michael Jordan did, not compared to the sole focus of competing to win that Michael Jordan had.
Do you ever recall playing golf with an opponent the day of a big game?
I don't. No. You know, it's funny because with all these different interviews I'm doing right now during the quarantine, I sent Danny Ainge a text message a couple days ago, and I'm hoping to connect with him and have him on the series, and I want to ask him about that. Because I played golf with Danny Ainge on a couple occasions, and you talk about competitiveness with Michael Jordan. Danny Ainge is a competitor in and of his own. I remember one time he and I played golf back in Boston, and he hit the ball. Todd, you'd get a kick out of this. He hit the ball about 30 yards right, deep into the woods. And I'm thinking to myself, just drop it. Just take your penalty stroke, move on. He spent all of his 5 minutes searching for his ball. He finally found it, right? Finally found it. He didn't take a penalty stroke. He didn't ask for an unplayable lie. It was in a ridiculous spot in the trees, and he had to, like, climb funky to get next to the tree and take a swing at it. And somehow he climbed up there and punched it back into the fairway. And that's another example of just kind of competing that I thought was really unique that came out in that documentary and kind of ties Danny into that as well.
Well, Dan, it's been great talking to you about having you reminisce on some of those memories, ones that, you know, a couple decades later that obviously are still pretty clear in view. So you've got a lot to do on this quarantine series, still hard at work. So we're going to take a quick break and let you get back to that. And when we come back, Todd and I are going to break down some of the top storylines across the state. So, Dan, thank you for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys. And at some point, we'll get back to our normal kind of routine with the three of us on the podcast. But until then, stay safe, guys, and keep up the great work.
You too. You too.
Are you a small business impacted by the coronavirus? Washington Federal is here to help. Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live, and it's offering a 5-year business line of credit with 90 days interest for free to businesses that have seen a 10% or greater drop. Apply now to receive up to $200,000 on business lines of credit. The folks at Washington Federal understand small businesses may need an emergency loan. They're doing their best to help during this global pandemic. If you're a small business owner who needs help, head to wafdbank.com to apply. Questions? Email business.lifeline@wafd.com.
Welcome back to the Scorebook Live Today podcast. Andy Buehler here with Todd Millis. It was a lot of fun to hear Dan regale some of his stories playing against Jordan. That's I can't imagine as somebody, who he held in such a high regard, he ended up getting to, you know, play with. And I'm sure that, you know, both of us have those types of stories, you especially just with your long winding career. But watching this documentary, and I know only two episodes have come out, so far out of the 10, what's been your favorite moment of the first two episodes?
Well, yeah, Dan kind of alluded to it. And I kind of found this as the interesting nugget as well. And in the injury his second year and something that management had talked to him about, you know, he was the franchise player and he was on this very strict minutes restriction, so strict that he couldn't play the last few seconds of a game that would have enhanced their playoff chances. That's not the part that interests me. It's the grudge that Michael held against Jerry Krause, and this, it you know, through the documentary, it seemed like it had sort of been building Tough documentary early in that.
And the Krause family.
What's that?
The tough documentary for the Krause family.
Yeah, and a guy that's, you know, obviously, you know, he's no longer here, you know, so he can't really get on and defend himself. But to listen to how that was sort of the turning point of their relationship with a guy that did a pretty good job building that team. Let's be honest. I don't know if he did a great job managing it once he got there. And the Scottie Pippen thing is a real, you know, that's, you know, what he being so underpaid was another thing that sort of caught my eye, but just the way he dealt with Phil Jackson and stuff, you're right. It didn't shed a really good light about Jerry Krause, but that seemed to be a turning moment for Michael. And, you know, you saw it throughout the first two episodes where Michael would sort of poke fun at Jerry Krause and his height, and you're going to come out and shoot free throws with us or layups with us today. But that seemed to be kind of the turning point of it is year two in a game they needed to win to enhance their playoff position. And he was held back, and, you know, the odd thing was they won the game anyway and did go to the playoffs. And we all saw what happened in that series with Boston. But, you know, Dan talked about 97. I remember 96. I remember I was a young reporter at the News Tribune. I was covering a city amateur golf tournament. Being from here, not a big Seahawks fan. I'm a Broncos fan. Not a big Mariners fan. I'm a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. But I was a huge Supersonics fan. That was the franchise from Seattle that I cheered dearly. I remember being a kid watching their first NBA championship. So I loved him. Dennis Johnson was my favorite player. I couldn't stand Jordan. I thought Jordan got every call in the book in the 90s. And in that series against that great Sonics team, you could probably relate to some of this with the Blazers teams that he faced too. It seemed like Michael kind of had his own set of rules with the officiating. So in the heat of the moment, I couldn't appreciate Michael. I hated him. As I was able to kind of see it in retrospect, I mean, to me, he's the best player who's ever, you know, laced him up. Yeah, it's interesting that some of that stuff sort of brought up some of those feelings when I was a kid and a young adult, and, you know, him playing my favorite team and roasting my favorite player in that Boston series in Dennis Johnson. I hated him, but you couldn't help but respect the guy. He was the greatest.
Yeah, absolutely. This was my favorite moment of the documentary is that, you know, you have a guy going up against the Celtics in the 1986 playoffs, and Dan talked about that run, that season where, you know, he's coming back from a broken foot. It's a tumultuous season and kind of the push and pull between the front office. First off, the documentary revealed that the Bulls didn't know this, but he convinced him. Well, they did know that he convinced him that he wanted to go, that he could go back and train and get in better shape back at the University of North Carolina. And unbeknownst to the Chicago front office, he was playing one-on-one. He eventually built his way up to fives when they didn't even know he was on the court playing. They thought he was rehabbing. And could you imagine, like, that's just one of the many Michael Jordan things that just wouldn't exist in the age of social media. Like, how quickly would somebody say, yeah, they snap a picture.
5 seconds. You get the 5 seconds. Yeah.
Right. So I got a kick out of that. And you know, the best quote, my favorite moment of the series came from a quote from Larry Bird. And that was after Jordan scored 63 points on the Celtics in 86. And I believe it was the first round. And you know, like Dan mentioned in the first segment, they didn't have the roster, and credit to Jerry Krause for that offseason, you know, bringing in Pippen, bringing in Horace Grant, bringing in Bill Cartwright. But Bird in that series, in that losing effort, you know, he goes, we won the series, but, you know, that wasn't Michael Jordan. That was God disguised as Michael Jordan. And as a reporter, it's like you just live for the quotes like that. And it speaks volumes. It says so much, you know, about that series, about that player, and about the level of respect that, you know, an already Hall of Famer had for you know, an up and comer. So. That was a lot of fun. I'm really excited, as I know many others are, for the series to continue Sunday nights. So,
yeah, I just want to shout out, you know, I also talked to Craig Elo this week. I know that's coming, the shot in 89. Yeah. It's 31 years. 31 years ago in early May when Jordan hit maybe his most defining shot. There's a few that are there in the conversation, but the one that he hit over Elo in the first round of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Eastern Conference playoffs against the Cleveland Cavaliers was certainly, to me, it was his defining shot in the emotion and the reaction afterward. Talking to Craig Elo about that, and I'm sure he's asked about it a number of times over the last three decades, but having him sort of go over that again and just, you know, the seconds before, and, you know, he had hit a big shot to give him the lead back before Jordan had hit the game winner. So that was funny. And I know Dan's talked to Craig Elo for the podcast group. So we're going to have our viewers, our listeners covered here moving forward with the Jordan documentary. It's going to be a lot of fun.
You got Craig Elo. You talked to him. Dickow talked to him for the podcast. You got Steve Shanwald, who was the president of business ops for the Bulls throughout Michael's whole entire tenure. You can listen to that podcast episode and look for that interview chopped up on the site scorebooklive.com/Washington. And coming up on the podcast, Dan just recorded an interview with Steve Kerr, one of Michael's teammates, and obviously, you know, now the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. So coming at you from all angles. You're right, Todd. But let's get back to talking to some high school sports, because, you know, sports aren't being played right now. We're still mired in the shutdown, and spring sports, unfortunately, have came to an end before they started. We'll continue as developments update to report on anything we learn about the fall football season as that comes into focus, and what the implications there as this stay-at-home order and the restrictions are not ready to be lifted in Washington as well as many parts of the country. So, but there's a few things that we love to talk about here that we've been reporting on, and chief among them, Todd, what have you been working on lately? There's been a couple of coaching hires in big football positions across the state that have been vacated by some exciting names. And you've talked to a couple of them.
Yeah, a couple of promotions, a couple offensive coordinators who are taking over some prominent jobs or coming from prominent positions. Bob Ames, the third all-time winningest football coach, retired here in February. And his son, Patrick Ames, a guy I covered when he was at the University of Puget Sound, he graduated from Meridian. He's been his offensive coordinator through the three state championship years. And a move that I think a lot of people up there anticipated. He's been hired as the new coach, and his dad's going to join him as in some sort of volunteer capacity, which is really important to Pat. The duo thing is way more important to him. He just wants to coach with his dad as long as that's possible. And it doesn't really change now that he's a head coach. That's the most important thing for him in continuing a really strong legacy up there. And then, as we all know, Emeka Egbuka and Chance McDonald, and that really high-powered Steilacoom offense, their offensive coordinator was Greg Hurd, a guy that played quarterback at Steilacoom, was a receiver at Eastern Washington, was their offensive coordinator at Steilacoom the last 2 years, got hired at Auburn Riverside, and talked to him yesterday. He had applied. You know, he's always wanted to be a head coach. He applied for a job in the area, didn't get it, and he, you know, somebody said, well, look at the Auburn Riverside job. He said, I don't think so. You know, I've already applied for a head coaching job. I'm just going to go back to Steilacoom and ride it through with this group of guys. And, you know, lo and behold, a family member, his aunt, basically said, you know, you're not one to really take chances. You know, you kind of play it safe. And, you know, it's going to hold you back. And he said he was really peeved by it. And then just kind of sort of reflecting on it, he said, you know, she's right. And he applied for the Auburn Riverside job and got it. And now he's a head coach for the first time in a program that's actually enjoyed a lot of success in the North Puget Sound League, going to the postseason as well last year. So kudos to him, and congratulations to Greg Hurd on being hired there for his first head coaching job.
Another big name a couple weeks ago that we haven't touched on the site, but certainly will leading up to the football season. That's Nick Baker, the new head coach at Hanford, who replaces Brett Jay, who stepped down that same week as Chihuahua legend Steve Graff stepped down. You know, Jay steps down, and you know, you and I are sitting here going like, okay, well, is there any coincidence? You know, is Jay going to step into the Hanford job? You know, what or the Chihuahua job. What's going on here? And you know, it was a timing coincidence, and so it turned out. And you know, one of the fascinating things about this hire from of Nick Baker at Hanford is that he joins a very competitive league on a year in year out basis, and he comes from the coaching tree of Monty Kohler, the all time winningest coach in state history at this point, active coach at O'Day in Seattle. So certainly has seen success, knows what it's like to build a program and maintain excellence across a number of years. Baker, I believe he went to Lake Stevens, played quarterback there. So he's got, you know, ties at a couple different pockets of the state. So looks like Hanford is in good hands, and is a first time head coach. It'll be exciting to see some of these head coaches step into the fold that have, you know, good experiences under accomplished head coaches. On to recruiting. We had the first big shoe to drop in the 2021 class make his commitment. That's four-star defensive end Josh McCarron of Archbishop Murphy committing to Virginia in the ACC, something that you don't really see that often. You know, it came down to Cal, Wazoo, some of the familiar names in this part of the country. You know, Virginia Tech was in there, but, you know, he ends up committing to Virginia. I spoke to McCarron just a couple hours after he committed, and he was just like, I was ready to commit to Cal. You know, I had a Zoom, you know, everyone's doing, you know, from the NFL to at every level is learning how to telecommunicate. And so he had a you know, quote unquote home visit on Zoom with the coach, his position coach, I believe somebody in the athletic director's office and an academic advisor. And he said it was the Zoom call that changed his life. Said his mom was in tears and they hung up the phone. He was ready before that to commit to Cal. And just the vision from an academic standpoint to them outlining the way they saw him, it was important to him that he played outside linebacker in college. He wanted the new challenge. He's a defensive end at the 2A level here and certainly had looks to do that in college as well as, you know, he was a tight end. He's a tight end as well, a very good one. So great athlete with great size, is headed to the ACC, and you know, his 24/7 labels him a four-star. So that's, you know, that's a pretty significant talent here in the state. There's a ton of talent across multiple sports, especially in football. I mean, he's the first. You know, maybe in the next couple of months we'll see some of those other names, some of the, you know, the JTs. Tumalaus, the Emeka Egbukas start to decide where they want to go.
Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, he's the first shoe to drop here of people who were had been uncommitted. Obviously, Sam Heward's been committed to the Huskies for a number of years, but yeah, you know, it's funny. The first time I saw Josh McCarron was at the 7-on-7 state championships up in Bellevue, as I was trying to get. You know, a lot of mug shots and photos in our photo database, and got to meet him with a lot of the Archbishop guys, and he just stands out. I mean, he's a big athlete who can run. Also, went up and did a story on them from practice the week after they beat upset Hawkinson, number one Hawkinson at the time, in a non league game, and got to see him play more defensive end that day. And he is every bit. Don't get caught up on the small school, the 2A thing. This kid can play at any school in the state. He's a really impressive athlete. And like you said, this is the first of many, many, many shoes of elite athletes to drop here over the next few months. And what we expect to be a very, very busy recruiting season.
Yeah. I talked to him about that Hawkinson game. It was, you know, as you know, one of the most impressive road wins in the non-conference and non-league of any team across the state last season, taking down the two-time defending champs who hadn't lost in over 2 years in their house. So he was animated talking about that, which was it was fun to hear. So looking forward to seeing him play his senior season and seeing how that 2021 recruiting class shapes up. On the site right now, scorebooklive.com/Washington, still bringing the heat. Todd, something you're working on that you want to promote?
Yeah, I mean, it's NFL draft week. I would anticipate, you know, a lot of people watch the Jordan documentary Sunday, and I imagine a lot of people are going to watch the first of three nights of the NFL draft, especially with nothing else going on. So, you know, I sat down with Rob Rang, who's been it's been 20 years now since he's been analyzing NFL drafts for a number of groups, and now he's with SI.com and a Tacoma guy that I've known for a long time, and he really nails these things. And you know, this class of Washington, he talks about Washington is gaining a reputation as sort of the state of Washington, and is gaining a reputation of producing just these high quality offensive linemen. You look at Caleb McGarry, you look at Josh Garnett, you know, you look at Zach Banner, guys that are sticking in the NFL. You know, I mean, and another one's coming through the pikes. He's probably going to be the first guy off the board from the state of Washington, and his name is Ezra Cleveland. And that kind of surprised me, because I hadn't really been paying attention a whole lot to the NFL draft hype, you know, over the past few months since the combine. I knew Ezra when he played at Bethel High School. He had a severe back injury that wiped out his junior year. Senior year, did a lot of different things, was a defensive player of the year or defensive lineman of the year for that league, and an all-state defensive tackle nose type two gap. And then went off to kind of Boise State and redshirted and kind of didn't hear much about him. And all of a sudden he's the guy over the Jacob Eason's and the, oh, who else? Evan Weavers, who had a great college career at Cal. This is the guy that looks like he's going to go off the board first. And there's a pretty good chance he could go off the board tonight in the first round. That's how much he's elevated his stock over the last few months, and had a fantastic NFL scouting combine in Indianapolis. So it's good to see a guy who kind of doubled down and bet on himself and said, hey, listen, I know what my draft grade is, you know, after my junior year, fifth, sixth round. And I think I'm better than that. And he showed that. And sure enough, he's really put a lot in his stock with NFL teams moving forward. And wouldn't be surprised tonight, maybe tomorrow, late first, early second round guy. But it's I've got 10 guys that could go from the state of Washington that very well could be drafted over the next 3 days. It's a pretty deep class, maybe not the headliner that we've seen in years past, like a Buda Baker, Miles Jack, those guys, but certainly a lot of quality, a lot of depth to look forward to over the next 3 days.
Scorebooklive.com/Washington is where you can find Todd's live updates from the draft over these next couple of days, and you know, various other stories. We're about to, you know, put out positional lists, highlighting some of the top baseball players across the state. Their senior season for a lot of them has been canceled, unfortunately, but that's not going to stop us from highlighting them. So that's your home for Washington High School sports, as it always is. I'm Andy Bueller. He's Todd Millis. Please subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts, you can subscribe for free. That way you can get every episode downloaded for free, fresh to your mobile device. So thank you for listening.